In Billy Roach's new play, A Love Like That, the local library, the Avalon, is about to move premises, trading a beautiful old building for a modern upgrade and signalling perhaps the end of an era. Andrew Flynn directs the play for Decadent Theatre Company. It opens next week at the Civic Theatre in Tala during the Dublin Theatre Festival, and Billy Roach is with me in studio now. I know it's getting a little run in Wexford beforehand, but I just want to hold off on that because it links into, I think, in a very peculiar way to the whole theme within the play. The play itself, Billy, It's set in this local library called the Avalon. The opening section of the script is a very detailed description of the building, of the set that will make the Avalon Library. Was there a very specific place in your mind, or is this a totally imagined location?
No, I imagined it, yes, yeah. But I totally imagined it.
Down to physical detail.
Yes. I'm inclined to do that with all my plays, though. I'm hopeless at drawing, so I can't actually sketch my plays, you know, my scenery out. So I'm inclined to do it with words. And, you know, sometimes when the designer gets added, the door is not where I thought it was, and et cetera, et cetera, but that's all right.
So is it like at the start of a play like this then, is it an image as strong as that, that you literally saw the rooms or the space that makes up the library?
It is. I really need to see the whole paraphernalia of the place, and I suppose I play, you know, I play all day. It's a play, you know, and I play, and you know, if I had little toy soldiers, I would set them all up with bottles and cups as being, you know,
the characters,
steps, and you know, absolutely. So I see very clearly where they're standing when they say such a line. Now, it doesn't mean that a director has to do that, but I have to.
To write the play, you have to see it that way. And how soon after you had the image of this library space or this this old building, how soon did it start to be peopled by, I suppose in particular, the people that we meet first of all are Debbie and Ellen.
Yes.
Ellen, a librarian who's been there for some time. Debbie, younger generation, comes in with a master's in library science and comes from a totally different standpoint or viewpoint from Ellen. When did those two characters start to people the space?
I think I probably would have always had Ellen, but you don't quite know who's going to come in the door for a while, you know, and sometimes too many people come in the door, and I do sack characters.
You ask them to leave,
I ask them to leave, please, and leave the good lines that they said behind them, and the other characters will hopefully find a way to use those lines. So, you know, I listen to a play, really, when I'm writing. Listen, what, you know, and I try not to impinge too much on it. I do usually know the beginning and where I'm going at the end. As a matter of fact, I would say I would always know that. Anytime I ever tried to do a play where I didn't know that, I failed.
That's interesting because, I mean, particularly in the case of Ellen, she is this older character in the play. She's older than the younger librarian, to put it simply. So there's a past there, and that past is inevitably going to impinge on the play in some way. So did you know her story in its completion, or did you just know, well, I know that that's where she's going to be at the very end of this, and I'll fill in how she gets there?
Yes, no, I didn't know all the ins and outs of her.
Yeah.
But I did know that she probably lived a lifeless, loveless life. And she needed to be redeemed from that somehow. And it was going to be painful. But she was going to... I mean, I've done this before. I write about love all the time, the absence of it, the longing for it, the loss of it, the pain of it. But, you know, that she would be moved on to the next stage of existence ever so slightly. It's just one of the things, one of my raison d'etre as a writer.
You know, I'm wondering how soon you put a bow and arrow into her hand. It was a Chekhov, I think it was, who famously said, if you have a gun in Act One, it better go off before the end of the play.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you bring a bow and arrow into, as you do, in Act One, I don't know where
I don't
it
know
goes.
Where that came from, but suddenly here was this very staid librarian who had joined the local archery club, and she arrived like Artemis with a bow and arrow.
Yeah, and was that mythological aspect important to you?
Yes. They uncovered somebody uncovered a note that I had made in an old jotter. I mean, I've been writing this for 4 years, so I don't remember all the ins and outs of how I got here. But there was a little myth written down. And I think I must have made it up, but a hero comes to woo a loveless maiden. He succeeds in his quest only to betray her love, and she turns into a wild boar and wounds him, you know, and he's carried off to be healed. So that
that was playing around in your mind.
That was playing around in my mind.
Yeah, and obviously the bow and arrow was going to lead you in that
or something,
direction somewhere. Yeah, but you have to make that fit into a modern type of situation.
Absolutely. So the myth gives the ordinary everyday a backbone that holds up. When you're writing for 4 years, you know, you will lose faith in this thing, you know. Mm. You'll lose belief in it and think, who would want to see it and why would I go on? But the myth keeps you going.
I suppose we've mentioned Debbie and Ellen, who are the two female characters that are there, the three male characters then. Aidan is, I suppose, of an age with... Would he be of an age with Ellen, or is he a little older?
Maybe a little older.
Yeah. I should also say Ellen played by Leslie McGuire, and the character of Debbie played by...
Jane McGrath,
people will know her from
Red Rock.
From Red Rock, on Virgin Media. And Aidan then, played by Peter Gowan.
Yes.
This is a man, again, with a lot of pain from the past.
A lot of pain, a widower, who may have lived his own loveless life, actually, we discover, you know. So, and he frequents the library, he's thirsting for knowledge. But he seems to want to be near Ellen too, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's a bit of that going on. And that there's also, I suppose, and you always have the wide boy.
The wide boy.
Lance is the wide boy in some ways here, isn't he?
Yeah, Jeff Minogue plays the wide boy. Lance arrives in and then, you know, Jeff is a beautiful looking man. He's an Irish George Clooney, really, you know. And he's perfect for this part.
Yeah, and just completing the cast then is Lawler Ruddy as John Joe.
Lawler Ruddy. Such a lonely...
Yeah, the John Joe character has that
beautiful,
lonely quality.
Beautiful actor.
And I guess it is what the story you tell, I presume, as the play goes on, unearths the kind of links between these people in their past and,
indeed,
you know, the pain that they've lived through, etc., etc. And that's best left seen play out in front of you. But I'll go back to the mythology again. The fact that you call this library Avalon, we're in Arthurian legend. Just remind us what Avalon is in Arthurian legend.
Well, it was a beautiful orchard where, you know, things grew, but it wasn't that where Arthur was buried as well? I think it was.
And wasn't Excalibur found,
Excalibur,
I think, in
all
Avalon?
That, all of that. So I suppose the bow is kind of Excalibur, except this time it's a woman who finds it. This is a theme in a lot of my work, actually. Cavalcaders is literally Camelot played out in ordinary life.
Cavalcaders with the barbershop quartet, or were they the ones
in the
shoe factory?
Quartet,
the barbershop quartet.
In a shoe shop, with the late great Tony Doyle. And something like Trojan Eddie, my film Trojan Eddie, was Dermot and Grainne, which is Camelot. So I think, though, that we all have a recurring myth in our lives, particularly writers. I've discovered, thankfully, late in the day, that mine is Dermot and Grainne.
It's the important one for you.
For me, And there's a recurring theme
and even
flowing through. I know Wexford might say, you keep telling us the same.
Well, it's a similar tune, but there are different words.
Absolutely.
to the story that you tell. How important are libraries to you? Very interesting to choose that as a setting for a play, I would have thought.
Well, you know, aesthetically, it's a beautiful... and I always need that aesthetic. Mm. You won't see me writing a play with a chair and a black box. You know, I
need place.
I suppose, I'm going back to when I was young, when I used to go see theatre in my young days. That's, you know, the magic of theatre was there. So I need that sense of place, yes.
And a place where stuff happens.
Library, when I was a child, I would remember the library. The library was across the corridor from the courtroom.
Right.
And we'd all go in, and sometimes you see a telly boy crying, you know, after getting 2 months in jail or something, and, you know, you'd see them, or he's in trouble for something or other.
So for you, the library was actually a place, not only did it hold books that held stories, but there were stories to be seen through the door.
All around you, yeah. And then you went into this very hushed world, and there was rules to be obeyed, and the smell and the feel of it, and the promise of, you know, did I know as a child I'd become a writer? No, I didn't, and and yet I did.
Yeah, yeah, it was...
Mine was going to be a journey the long way around. I was going to be, you know, a singer, an actor, or, you know, I was going to do... come the long journey, but...
All of which are still part of your life, in fact.
Very much so, yeah.
The other thing that really struck me about this play, and it took me back to the Wexford Trilogy, I said to you this before we came to her, was that the Wexford Trilogy being that the three plays that kind of looks at, if you like, different aspects of a Wexford, a kind of a fictional Wexford society. But it's the community, the sense of community that's in this library. And community is double-edged. It's both protective, but it's also suffocating.
Absolutely.
How important is that double-edged quality to you?
Well, you know, it gives a nice bitter of sweet tinge to it all. You know, I mean, anyone who's going to be artistically, maybe it's not so much nowadays, but you had to fight your battle. And if you thought it was going to be paved with compliments, that's not the case.
And so I'll go back to now why I held off saying, I said, yes, the play is opening as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival in the Civic Theatre, is playing there. But there are, you're previewing, in fact, in Wexford, where, and this links, I think, beautifully into the whole idea of somewhere that's about to change, building that's about to go into disuse, essentially.
Yeah, it's in the Dunwira Hall, which is an old dance hall of the old-fashioned kind, amateur dramatics, big go. Musicals, you know, hold 60 years of Wexford history, really. And I would have danced there to all the great show bands when I was 17, 18. I could see myself every Thursday night getting... It was mod time and we all had suits and shirts and everything was pristine, you know. How we ever got from there to long hair and hippies, I don't know, because it was... every Thursday night we were dancing and my heroes were people like Fran O'Toole from the Miami and Billy Brown from the Freshmen. Those two in particular would have been big on my...
Just one final question, because it was a set of stories that I loved when it first came out, was your book of short stories, Tales from Rainwater Pond. It's been translated into Italian. That's one of the projects that you're... How involved are you in that, or do you just hand it over and...
Well, you know, it's an interesting one, because the lady who's doing the translation, I said to her, how did you come by this? And she said, well, I was in Dublin. I went into a charity shop and there was the book and it looked quite nice. I picked it up and it said, Warmest Wishes, Billy Roach. And she said, that's nice. I'll buy it and for 50 pence... She bought it, read it, and now we're going into
an Italian tragedy. Yeah. Good job it didn't say, Warmest Wishes, Peter, Patrick, Mary, Jane, or they'd be in trouble.
There was no name on it. But the interesting about it was that she would ring me up and ask me stuff like, what does Jersey Full Mazes mean?
Right, yeah, so she was picking up on the Wexford, the little
so how
Wexford
dialect.
How do you transfer
all those Irish... things, but you know, hopefully, touch wood, it'll be out in December.
Right, well, our Italian listeners can await that. In the meantime, those of us a bit closer to Wexford and indeed to Dublin can taste A Love Like That, the play that Billy Roach has been talking to us about. Previews in the Playwright's Home, the town of Wexford at the Dunwira Dance Hall on the 27th and 28th of September, and then opens at the Civic Theatre in Talla during the Dublin Theatre Festival. It runs there from the 1st through until the 5th of October. You can find out full details on decadenttheatrecompany.ie and dublintheatrefestival.ie.